This is Blue Dot. I'm your host, Dave Schlom. This week, we look at how Oregon is preparing for the total eclipse of the sun on August 21st. Its infrastructure will be tested by the million visitors expected to cram into the 65-mile-wide path across the state. We'll talk to the superintendent of a small national park unit, John Day Fossil Beds, and a representative from the Oregon Department of Transportation. It's all new and all blue. Join us. Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schlom. Oregon is ground zero for the total eclipse of the sun on August 21st. It's the first place that the moon's shadow will make landfall on the coast as it races across the United States at 1,500 miles an hour before exiting at South Carolina's beaches. Earlier this summer, we talked to Shelley Hall at John Day Fossil Beds National Monument in eastern Oregon. Hall is the superintendent there, and she's deeply concerned about her park being able to handle large amounts of visitors since they have a relatively small infrastructure. Let's listen to our conversation with her about the plans for the eclipse and this remarkable geologic wonderland in eastern Oregon. Shelley, I'd like to start by getting to know a little bit more about you. What drew you to your work in the National Park Service, and when was your first job where you got to wear the iconic ranger hat?
Well, I had been drawn to the national parks, you know, through my childhood, camping and hiking in national parks. I was attracted to the wild lands of National Park Service units. My first job that I actually got paid, I started as a volunteer when I was young enough that my mom had to drive me after school. But my first paid job where I got to wear the actual flat hat was working in the entrance station at Rocky Mountain National Park in 1977, I think it was, showing my age there.
When's the first time you saw John Day Fossil Beds National Monument? What were your first impressions when you got there?
Well, I actually had visited maybe 20, 25 years ago, and I had a vivid memory of Blue Basin in the Sheep Rock unit because it's so spectacular.
So for those of us not familiar with the park, give us an overview of the separate units. Where exactly are they? Where is this area? And why is it set aside as a national monument?
Okay, we are in central to eastern Oregon. We're generally about 2 hours east of Bend. We have three units of the national monument. The Painted Hills unit is 9 miles west of the town of Mitchell in Wheeler County. The Clarno unit is 18 miles southwest of the town of Fossil in Wheeler County. And then the Sheep Rock unit is 9 miles northwest of the town of Dayville in Grant County, Oregon.
And, of course, the name of the park is, you know, Fossil Beds. So tell us about why it's special in terms of the fossil beds that are there.
Well, so one thing I guess I would like to point out is that sometimes people are confused by the name John Day Fossil Beds because they think there's, you know, some very discrete areas that have fossils, but there's really fossils throughout the John Day Basin, this area of Oregon. It contains one of the longest and most continuous records of Cenozoic period of evolutionary change and biotic relationships. I mean, it really is a very unique and globally significant fossil record here. And one of the really important things about it also is that it's one of the few areas on the planet that has numerous well-preserved, ecologically diverse fossil biotas that are in sedimentary layers in close proximity to volcanic rocks, which are extremely datable. So the cool thing about John Day Fossil Beds is that we have a long record, 50 million years of fossils, and those fossils are in layers that can be very accurately dated.
Well, let's talk a bit about the ongoing paleontological work there. You can watch specimens being worked on there, right?
Yes, you can. We have a very active, ongoing, you know, living science in action right now today. Our paleontology staff goes out and collects fossils pretty much every week, and we have a very state-of-the-art lab with a big window where visitors can look through the window and watch our fossil preparator actually preparing fossils. So when we bring them in, they're often, you know, entombed in rock with just a little bit showing. And she works away very methodically and slowly working on them to release the fossil out of the rock. And you can see all that, right? As a visitor, you can watch her working on it. And we have a microscope that shows you close up on a TV screen what she's working on as well.
Wow. So you actually get to like watch it in operation.
Yes.
And before we get to talking about the eclipse later, if somebody's going up to visit for the first time sometime this summer, maybe before the eclipse, what would be a couple of your recommendations for, like, you know, if you only had a day to spend in the park there, what would be some highlights that you should certainly not miss?
Oh, it's really hard to pick for a day, but you certainly want to go to the Thomas Condon Paleontology Center, because we have over 500 fossils on display there. We have those murals that really give you the full background on the science here. And that's in the Sheeprock unit of the monument. And in the Sheeprock unit, there's also, like I mentioned, Blue Basin, which has some hiking there. There's some short hikes right up into the basin, or a short hike right up into the basin, which is definitely worth doing. And then there's also the Blue Basin Overlook Trail, which is a little over 3-mile loop that you can look back down into the basin from above, which is pretty spectacular. And then, of course, Painted Hills is very popular, just because it's visually stunning. And then at Clarno as well, like I said, it's a little less because it's not so colorful, but the rock formations are pretty amazing in and of themselves there as well. And we have hiking trails at all three units.
Okay, let's get to the eclipse, because you're in a really remote, sparsely populated area that's likely to get a large influx of visitors around August 21st. What kind of preparations have you made to deal with that?
Well, I guess let me just sort of set the stage. So last year, we had a record visitation for the year, which was about 210,000 people, which was the most we've ever had at John Day Fossil Beds. We are expecting somewhere in the order of 50,000 people for the weekend of the eclipse. So that's roughly a quarter of our annual visitation in a very short period.
Wow. And the roads in there are just 2-lane highways, right?
Yes. The roads are 2-lane highways. For example, at Painted Hills, we have, a 2-seater vault toilet. That's what we have there normally.
Are you bringing some more facilities in?
So there's a lot of planning that has been going on. I've had astronomers tell me seeing a total solar eclipse will change your life. And I say, yeah, it's already changed my life, and not the way they mean.
Yeah.
I have been planning for the eclipse for about 3 years now. So one of the things that we're doing is bringing in a National Park Service regional incident management team to help us deal with the influx of visitors. My primary responsibilities are to protect the resources of the park, mm-hmm. fossil resources especially, and also to protect public safety. And so with that many people here, it's going to be crazy. There's a lot of planning going on a state level, other federal agencies, counties. The state is estimating we'll have 1 million extra people in the path of totality across the state for that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be quite something.
Yes,
so
it will be.
Part of what we're trying to tell people is to know before they go, that kind of approach.
Mm-hmm.
Even under the best of conditions, we have limited services out here. It's 40 to 80 miles between gas stations. And with the eclipse, there's going to be difficulties with fuel trucks getting in, those kinds of things, because the roads will be clogged. Things like, if you're visiting the area and you need insulin or an EpiPen or those kinds of things, you can't buy those out here. So you need to come prepared. Even under good conditions, we have very limited cell coverage. And so you can't be expecting your cell phone's going to work. Things like people making sure they're bringing enough food and water and realizing that it could be very hot here that time of year. And we're at the peak of fire season. So, you know, people being aware of those kinds of issues and being careful.
I'm also curious as to what you've noticed in terms of public awareness. You've been planning for this for years. But for people coming into the park now, how aware are they of this event?
Generally, people are very aware of it. People have been aware of it for a long time. We've been getting calls from all over the world from visitors wanting to know about the eclipse for several years now. So people have been planning literally for years where they want to be when the eclipse happens. And a lot of people have identified this portion of Oregon primarily because we tend to have clear skies in August, and especially at that time of the morning,
mm-hmm.
Where other places under the path of totality, that might not be the case.
Have you ever
a better chance of clear skies here.
Have you ever seen a total solar eclipse?
I have not.
So, you know, despite all the, I know you've got to be worried about all this and it's stressful, but are you looking forward to seeing it?
I am. You know, it's good thinking about talking to you made me sort of stop and say, oh, yeah, there is this really phenomenal thing, and I'm going to be right here under the path of totality. So for a couple of minutes on the morning of August 21st, I'm going to stop and take a breath and really experience it. You know, sometimes that gets lost in all this planning of how many porta-potties are we going to have and how many dumpsters do we need and... those kind of details.
Sure, it's like planning a huge party for your family and doing all the cooking and everything, and then everything happens and they leave and you realize, well, all I did was work.
Yeah.
and they had fun, but man, let's go to somebody else's house next time.
Well, I think we will all enjoy the actual eclipse itself. Well, then the planning will be in place and we'll be able to take a breath and enjoy it.
How much staff do you have there normally?
We have about 14 permanent year-round staff, and this summer we've hired a few extra summer employees, so we have about 20 total.
What do you think about experiencing any kind of natural spectacle, and why is our National Park Service so important to all of us for appreciating nature, not just this, but all the time?
Oh, our national parks are phenomenal. We have over 400 National Park Service units across the country, and the expanse of natural areas that are preserved, but not only that, the connection with our history, and just the things that feed our souls as people to get out into wild places and experience it. And, you know, I would like to say that, yes, it'll be amazing to see the eclipse from John Day Fossil Beds, but we see amazing things here every day. It's amazing to visit a national park on any day because they have so much to offer.
Well, and I would encourage our listeners to go visit the park some other time when you can, you know, really be able to get around and see all of the really beautiful things that you have there.
Well, and enjoy, you know, the connection with nature is often in the quiet moments.
What's, like, your favorite part of your job?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know, some of it is working with the staff at national parks, because national parks attract really wonderful, dedicated people to work there. And then also just seeing sort of the delight in visitors when they see someplace for the first time. Or, you know, here I hear from visitors a lot, I've lived in Oregon my whole life and I've never been to John Day Fossil Beds, and I'm just blown away and I need to come back and spend more time.
Yeah, that's a big payoff right there.
It is.
When, you know, we always think about when we get our vacation time, we want to go to a national park or something like that. For somebody like you, when you get your vacation time, what do you do?
Oh, I go to national parks.
Yeah, what are some of your favorites?
Of course. I mean, I've worked in 11 different national parks, but I visit national parks all the time in my time off in the U.S. and around the world. So,
off the top of your head, as quick as you can, if I told you you get to go to 5, we'll pay your way, all your expenses paid, what would be 5 you'd want to go see?
I've actually worked at some pretty amazing ones, like Olympic National Park is amazing.
In Washington?
In Washington, yes, the Olympic Peninsula. I worked at Kenai Fjords National Park in Alaska, which was also pretty phenomenal. You know, a lot of the parks in Alaska are, I mean, you talk about wild places. They're just, they're so wild and so vast and wildlife, you know, living out there. I'm a wildlife biologist by training. So before I came to John Day Fossil Beds, I worked on things like marbled murrelets and piping plovers and brown bears. So I like wild places.
Okay, that's three.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Probably Gates of the Arctic. Most of mine actually are probably in Alaska. I also like Apostle Islands in Wisconsin. Is a beautiful area. You know, it's like asking me to choose between my children.
Yeah, I knew you'd say
all that. National parks have amazing things to offer.
Why they're parks.
Right.
Yeah. My favorites are in California, really. One of my favorite places, and people might be surprised because I go to Lassen Park a lot, and I do love it. It's probably my favorite place. But Point Reyes National Seashore is such an amazing treasure in Northern California.
Yeah, Point Reyes is nice. Yeah.
Just an interesting, strange environment out there. It's like another world.
Well, and I guess that's what I would say is I'd encourage people, wherever you live, visit a national park that's near you. You know, you don't have to plan a big exotic trip to Alaska or something. There are amazing parks all across the country. Every park has a phenomenal story to tell.
And that's such great advice. I know I talk to so many people that live in this area that have never been to Lassen Volcanic National Park, which is about an hour away, and they've never been there.
Oh, yeah, and Lassen is great. I remember spending some time on the top of Lassen, and it was very cold, but it was wonderful.
Well, Shelley, it was fun to talk to you, and I appreciate your time and listening to all this. I'm going to be there. I'm not going to be in your park, but I'm in Kimberly.
Oh, you are? Well, that's practically in our park. So.
Yeah, I'll drive by there.
Stop on in and say hi.
If it's not too crowded, yes. if it's not overwhelmingly crowded, I will come say hi to you.
Okay, good. Thanks, Dave.
But if it looks like Mad Max and, you know, they're and the scenes from Contact where all the people descend on the very large array in Socorro, New Mexico. If it doesn't look like that, I'll stop in and say hi.
Well, it's going to be interesting. I can guarantee you that.
Like you said, be prepared. And there's a lot of different places along the eclipse path that people can go.
Yes.
And I think the biggest message that I would say is go visit John Day Fossil Beds National Monument if you're interested at all in paleontology and geology, because it's a spectacular place.
Hey, and even if you don't think you are interested in paleontology, when you get here, you'll be amazed.
Exactly.
Find you're more interested than you know.
Yeah, it's one of those, but don't expect to find dinosaurs, right?
Correct.
Okay, we got that right. Hey, thanks, Shelley.
Okay, thanks, Dave.
Shelley Hall, superintendent of John Day Fossil Beds National Monument.
You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Shlom. After a break, we'll talk to Dave Thompson from the Oregon Department of Transportation about their plans to make sure people are safe on the roads for what is likely to be the biggest tourist event in the state's history. Stay with us. And we're back. Our next guest is Dave Thompson. He's a public information officer for the Oregon Department of Transportation. They're working hard to get the word out to the general public to plan ahead for viewing the eclipse on August 21st, lest everyone be caught in the colossal traffic jam of all time. You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio. I'm Dave Shlom, and we're talking to Dave Thompson, and I want to talk to you about your plans, well, the Department of Transportation's plans for what's going to be happening on August 21st, because Oregon is ground zero for the eclipse on the West Coast, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and we're really excited. I'm a big astronomy fan, so I can't wait. I'm very much looking forward to this. But if people want to come and visit, you're welcome. We'd love to have you. But if you don't plan ahead, you won't have a good time.
And when did this first show up on your radar as far as the Department of Transportation?
Oh, more than a year ago. When we got word that some of the main tourist areas had already sold out, like Kenita, which is a pretty famous tourist area in Central Oregon. Its hotel filled up more than a year, almost 2 years ago. We got word of that and said, okay, wait a minute. Let's sit down and think about what's going on here. The latest estimate from other agencies is that we may have 1 million people come into the path of totality in Oregon. 1 million people.
Now
that's another one quarter of the state's entire population.
Now, is that 1 million people coming into Oregon or just 1 million people going to be in the path?
In the path.
Okay.
We fully expect a bunch of residents to try to get into the path of totality. Hopefully not at the last minute. We're certainly doing a lot of messaging, a lot of press releases and Facebook posts and Twitter tweets, trying to warn residents to not think that you can get there at the last minute, because it's going to be very difficult. But the out-of-state tourists who are coming in, we're excited to have you, but please listen to our advice. Arrive early, stay put, and leave late. And I can explain each one of those.
Let's do that. What would your definition be of arriving early?
Friday, okay. Saturday at the latest. If you wait until Sunday or Monday, you're going to run into the large crowds who didn't plan ahead like you do.
Mm-hmm.
So get here early and stay put. Once you're where you want to be, don't be trying to drive around much, because everybody else will be trying to drive around.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe bring your bike or rent a bike. Be prepared for walking to the different fairs or festivals you're attending. Every place along this route, the hotels are sold out. There's lots of festivals and fairs in every one of these communities throughout the area. They're all excited to have you. But if you're not prepared for getting around in the difficult space, Madras is a wonderful little town in Central Oregon, population of about 6,000 or 7,000. They're expecting several hundred thousand for the days around the eclipse, and they've got something like 15 or 20 different festivals and fairs going on in different places. It's going to be pretty hard to get around just because of the amount of traffic. There are two highways in that area, both two-lane. So if you put another 200,000 people, that's what, 50,000 cars? That's going to be very crowded. If you don't plan ahead, you won't enjoy the trip as much as you want to, and we want you to.
And what are the areas that you're most concerned about?
Well, the Madras area along US 97, just because it's going to be so popular, it's got the best potential for a great sunny day, like 96% of the time during that time of year. It's sunny and clear. Our concerns there are not only traffic, but the fact that the weather will be pretty warm. That's in the hot spots of Oregon. So we're expecting temperatures, again, this is a long-range forecast, so we don't really know. But in years past, it's been in the 80s, sometimes in the 90s, and the fire danger may be very high. So we're concerned about that. The central part along the Willamette Valley along I-5, Salem is right along I-5. Salem's the capital, and that's a big spot where in the middle of the path of totality. The issues there are just the number of people who think they can pop down for the day, or pop up from Southern Oregon for the day, just get into that path. there will be gridlock in Salem. That doesn't mean you can't come. You just need to plan ahead. Do you intend to park? Where? You just going to pull off someplace? You cannot stop on the highway to look at the eclipse because people behind you may not see you there. Don't get out of your car and walk around. I mean, that's just frightening that people will, they'll be so late that they'll just say, oh my goodness, here it is. We've got to get out and look. Well, please plan ahead. The other area, of course, is the coast, which is the ground zero. Newport and Lincoln City, there's basically one major highway that runs along the coast, US 101. It's only two lanes in each direction. So if you're trying to get in or out of that area, there's only one road you can get on. So pretty much by definition, that's going to be very full. So if you don't get here early, you may be sitting on that road.
So, that is the key, is plan ahead. And even if you haven't, you're not going to probably find any kind of motel accommodations or anything like that at this point. What would be your best advice as to, you know, a safe place to try to get to for somebody that wants to get there and spend the weekend? How could you go about that?
Well, I would go to the different campground and hotel sites to see if there's anything that opens up. Maybe there's a waiting list. Maybe there's some more rooms that, even though they're all sold out, maybe there are still a couple for who knows. But if you don't have a place to stay, if you don't have friends that will let you stay, it may be very close to too late to get here and have an enjoyable experience. We're all, you know, this is a huge tourist thing for a lot of businesses. That's important to them, and I'm not decrying that for 1 minute. What I want is for everybody to come here and be safe and enjoy it, so that maybe someday they'll want to come back when maybe it's not quite so crazy. They won't have that experience if they don't plan ahead. It all boils down to that we all have a shared responsibility to stay safe on the road. You cannot expect any government agency to just take care of you when you don't plan and just show up with no place. We want everybody to share in that responsibility, be prepared, and have a good time watching a celestial dance that we may not ever see again in our individual lifetimes.
Well, I think that's the key. And, plan ahead and be prepared are the watchwords for this one. And Dave Thompson from the Oregon Department of Transportation, thanks for your time.
Anytime.
Thanks to our guests, Shelley Hall from the John Day Fossil Beds National Monument and Dave Thompson from the Oregon Department of Transportation. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio in Northern California. You can listen to this and past episodes on mynspr.org, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our communications coordinator is Casey Gardner. Follow us on Twitter at NSPR or me at Dave Shlom. Blue Dot is engineered and co-produced by the man on the board, Nolan Ford. Our theme music, Big Wave Dave, was composed and performed by Matt Schiltz of New York City. For all of us here, I remind you there that we all live on a pale blue dot.